When you think about meal kit companies, what do you see? Probably long, complicated recipes and subscriptions you can't escape. But with the new Blue Apron, we're doing meal delivery differently. No subscription needed. Faster, easier meals. And the same dedication to quality we've always had. Shop 100 plus meals at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. When you use Angie for your home projects, you know all your jobs will be done well. Roof repair? Done well. Kitchen sink install? Done well. Deck upgrades? Done well. Electrical upgrade? Done well. Angie's been connecting homeowners with skilled pros for nearly 30 years, so we know the difference between done and done well. Hire high-quality pros at Angie.com.
It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. A happy best day of the week to everybody. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We are the Insiders. We are brought to you by Jiffy Lube. And we're hanging out with you until noon. On an actual Donut Friday, the real Donut Friday, on a Thursday.
On a Thursday.
Yeah, since our colleague JC decided to take it upon himself to not consult with the Donut Committee and bring in donuts on Wednesday, I did not want to not bring anything today.
Yeah.
Because the people rely on us.
They do.
They know Kyle and James are going to bring treats. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't want morale to be low because people are coming in going, my assumption is that people's thought process, and in reality, probably nobody thinks about this, but in my headcanon, they do. In reality, if somebody actually does think about that, they probably go, awesome, we got donuts on Wednesday. Nobody's thinking about Thursday. Nobody cares. But in my head, people are like, awesome, we got donuts on Wednesday, and we're going to get donuts on Thursday. That's a two-donut week. That's a good week. So I couldn't let people down today, but I felt like bringing extra donuts would have been excessive.
Yeah, it would have been donuts like shots fired.
Yeah, right. I'm not actually, like, we're playing up the JC thing for a bit. We love JC. We sit with JC every morning. But I didn't want it to feel like, hey, no, we do donuts here. But I still wanted to bring some treats. So I stopped at Trader Joe's. Salute to the homies at Trader Joe's. Mm-hmm. And I got us some cinnamon rolls. I got us some of these apple crumble pastry things that looked delicious. And then they have pumpkin spice donut holes that I grabbed as well. And people have cleared out a lot of it.
Yeah, it's like...
So I'm excited that people were excited.
The apple thing kind of looks like it's Fenhard's, like...
Yeah, like a bear claw.
Yeah, the little plastic.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
Open up.
Yeah.
I think you probably should have just gone with like 3 dozen donuts and asserted your dominance.
Oh, just fill that island, that kitchen island
That's
with
right.
donuts?
Yeah, just like take that, JC.
If I had a better... We have a good relationship with JC. If we had a better relationship with JC, I would feel way more comfortable doing that. Also, like 4 dozen donuts would cost a lot.
It's so expensive.
I'm not trying to shell out $100 for a bit.
Yeah, it's 40 something bucks every week for donuts.
Oh,
yeah,
that's brutal. But you do 24.
I do 2 dozen, and it's
I do 18.
I do have a stamp card though, so for every 10th one is it every 10th I get a dozen free.
Every 10th dozen you
every
get a dozen
Every 10th dozen,
nice.
I get one free.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Well, great. So every 5 times, you get a free dozen.
Yeah, so it's only 20 bucks that week.
Sick. Love that. All right, he's James. I'm Kyle. And folks, it's day 81.
Kuminga Watch.
We've never been more back. We are so back. We've been doing this bit, and the bit was nothing is happening.
Yep.
We would talk about it. We'd fall into conversations about it, but realistically, nothing's been happening, and we hadn't heard anything on the trade front, and then yesterday, Sam Amick in the Athletic reports that trade talks have fired back up. between the Sacramento Kings and the Golden State Warriors. And unfortunately, there's nothing new in those trade talks. I'm interested to find out, as we kind of crack this open here and get down to it, I'm interested to find out who picked up the phone and reinitiated trade talks. That would be intriguing to me.
Yeah.
Did the Kings go, hey, we're getting closer, let's tap back in? Or did the Warriors say, man, you know what? Because I think there's a dramatic difference here.
Mm-hmm.
If the Kings call the Warriors, it's the Kings going, hey, I know you're running short on time. Just wanted to touch base. 2030 protected pick. Malik Monk, where we at? That's dramatically different than if the Warriors said, all right, to hell with this. Kings, what's going on?
The way it was framed in the piece, there's this little tiny sentence that's hiding.
Okay.
That says something to the effect that, but the Kings are probably going to have to up their, change the trade, the protections on the pick.
Yes.
That tends to make me believe that Warriors are the ones who are like, hey, let's have one last go at this thing. Mm-hmm. Let's have one last conversation. Can we get something done? Because your offer isn't enough for us to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But if you change protections just a little bit, maybe we can work something out. So as of right now, it looks like it's a 2030 first round pick that's lottery protected. And if it's not the 2030, it becomes a 2031 pick. And the 2031 pick, for those of you who have forgotten this out there in the world,
mm-hmm.
is the one that the Kings gave up a pick swap for. So
the Harrison Barnes trade.
Yeah, the Spurs actually have the Spurs get the best of the picks between the Kings mm-hmm. and the Spurs. So the Kings still have their pick, but if the Spurs are awesome and the Kings are bad, they could go from the first pick to the 28th pick
mm-hmm.
and lose the pick. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how this thing is setting up, that if it's not that pick. So I'm of the opinion that, like, look, if the Kings are serious about getting this done, and the money seems to still be in line, right? It still seems to be a three-year, $63 million deal. I think the final year in the Kings' offer is a player option,
mm-hmm.
which is what they've been asking for.
Right.
But I also, I have this feeling that if you're this close and you're right at the finish line, and they're going to be the one who has to figure out what they're going to do with their salary cap, whether they're going to mm-hmm. have to trade Moody, or they're going to have to trade Hield, or they're going to have to hold on and mm-hmm. wait until later off at some later date and go, okay, we want to get under the first apron. I have a feeling that the Kings could say something like, hey, we want to keep the protections the same, or maybe we'll go top 10 protected, right? Mm-hmm. Not top 14,
mm-hmm.
but we'll throw in a second round pick. Mm-hmm. And I think that, like, you could probably get this thing done. Mm-hmm. Like, if it's that close and if they're still calling, okay.
That's been my issue this entire time. If you like the player and it comes down to protections on a pick in 2030, if you're Scott Perry, if you're still here in 2030, that pick is not going to matter very much.
Yeah.
That's straight up. And if you believe in Jonathan Kuminga in that way, then do whatever unprotection you have to do to that 2030 pick. Do you know how long 2030 is away? That's so far in the future.
It is. But I'm going to add the other element. It's very possible that you have Kuminga for 2 years and then he opts out and he leaves in 2027.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've got nothing to show for it, and you don't have the pick.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it becomes like, I get what you're saying. He's a 22-year-old player going on 23. You're like, okay, like you should be able to, you should feel comfortable that this guy's going to be part of your future.
And you would think so.
Worst case scenario in 2030 or 2031, at least you'll still have Kuminga on your roster.
Mm.
But that's number one. That's the pick is so far away that you don't know if that's going to be the case, but also you're looking at a 2-year deal with his ability to opt out after 2 years and you trying to figure out if he's the right fit for you long term still.
Then what are we doing here?
No, I'm with you.
Then honest to God, if the because we've heard this with every single trade-related thing with the Kings, I feel like, since we started this show. Well, you got to hold on to your picks. Well, you don't want to give up. Oh, well, no, you got... Well, you don't want to give up the pick. Well, I'm not... I would do that, but not for... like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
To do what? To stay stagnant? Just in case we're ass in the future, let's not try and get better now. That's insane.
Yeah.
That is an insane way to go about thinking about building a basketball team. Hey, we might be trash in 5 years, so let's just kind of... let's make sure we have those picks. Like, all right, man, cool. But well, if you're not sold on Jonathan Kuminga, then don't take the call.
I'm with you, but I'd also point out, too, that, like, there is no guarantee that Kuminga... you are banking on futures here.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, there's risk involved. I'm not denying that.
Yeah, so if it was a sure bet that Kuminga is going to make you a playoff team this year, mm-hmm. and for the next, sure. you know, 2 to 3 years, and you could lock him up long-term, that's one thing, but...
if that was a sure bet, the Warriors wouldn't be trading him.
Well, I mean,
like there's risk reward here.
No, yeah, I get you.
The risk of, to me, because right now, when we look at 2027, we look at 2027 through the lens of, okay, thank God, we can wipe the slate clean then, and then we can figure out how to build moving forward. This is a player who by 2027 will be like entering his prime.
Oh, yeah.
Who has not gotten a real opportunity, who's pissed and out for vengeance, mm-hmm. who we've heard the stuff about Kuminga does want to be here, doesn't want to be here in Sacramento. It wouldn't shock me at all if Jonathan Kuminga is like, yeah, get me to the team as close as possible to Golden State so I can bust their ass 4 times a year. And also, while they fall off in the post-Curry era, I'm going to be the guy that makes the Kings great.
Mm.
That wouldn't shock me an ounce.
Yeah.
And we've talked, this is the whole deal with Jonathan Kuminga. Like, this entire conversation, what you and I are talking about, is the entire discussion, like the baseline, the foundation of this discussion. It's, do you believe in Jonathan Kuminga or don't you? And if you don't, then you're obviously not going to want to trade for him. But if you believe that, man, you know what? He was really underutilized. We think we can put him in a role. We can play him at the four, and he can be in a situation where he can really thrive and be the player that he wants to be. And we think that player is going to score 20-plus points a night and be an all-star. Then great. And if it doesn't work, then damn. Like, you try, at least you tried something.
Yeah.
I would rather that, personally. I would rather see the Kings do that than the Kings play out the string here with this group. Maybe they make the playoffs this year. Maybe they don't. Next year, same deal. And then, all right, 2027, we're going to jettison everyone. And there's Domas here and Keegan Murray and Nick Clifford and Maxime Reynaud. And all right, let's pick up the pieces now. At least we have a 2030 pick. I would so much rather take a gamble on Jonathan Kuminga and hope that it works out. Maybe not now, because I think the Kuminga fit now is weird.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because that means either DeMar DeRozan, Dennis Schroeder, or Zach LaVine are going to the bench, given where they want to play him. And so I think it's a little bit clunky and weird right now. It may not help them in the immediate, but I think there's a real chance. I think it's their best chance to have a star potentially in 2026, 2027, and beyond.
Well, yeah, and I mean, like, look, I think the appealing thing to Kuminga is not only is he 22 going on 23,
mm-hmm.
but he's that with 4 years in the league. Like, yes. He understands the game. He knows the grind. Like, you're not getting, like, a 22-year-old college senior that you have no idea how his game is going to translate. You mm-hmm. know that there's a floor to Kuminga that's relatively high.
Right, right.
And... I mean, the reason why Kuminga wants to come to Sacramento
mm-hmm.
is because they have literally laid out a plan where he is the starting power forward, playing X amount of minutes and with X amount of touches per game. Mm-hmm. That's what they've laid out, this idea of who he can be in Sacramento, right? So if you believe he can be the player that you're laying out for him, then like you should go ahead and press the button and figure out how to get the deal done.
Mm-hmm.
But like, look, there's a ton of risk here for everybody. And I think the one thing if you're the Kings is that if you're not just giving up, you know, mm-hmm. a pick, you're also giving up a player who's actually a very good player.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we can't sit here and act like giving up Malik Monk is like Kuminga for Monk straight up. Like that could end up being not a good trade for you in itself,
mm-hmm.
let alone the first round pick.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I still like the way that you're set up going into the season is everyone kind of knows the direction you're heading and mm-hmm. everyone kind of feels like you're the 10th, 11th, 12th seed mm-hmm. in the Western Conference. Like you're not a play-in team. You're not That's a playoff it. Team. This at least gives you a glimmer of hope for something different.
Yes.
For a balancing of your roster in a way and for something more for the future. And like, I think there's something sneaky here too when mm-hmm. it comes to rotations and who plays where,
mm-hmm.
but we'll probably get into that a little bit later.
Yeah, no, we can dig into that. And I want to address, because I saw our guy Sakarina Bagley, salute, appreciate you tapping in every single day, talking about people want the Kings to outbid themselves. And the thing is they're not outbidding themselves. They're trying to put together a bid that entices the Warriors to make the trade, to pull the trigger on the sign and
trade. To say yes.
Right. Yeah. So they're not bidding against themselves. They're bidding against whatever the Warriors' threshold is for mm-hmm. trading Jonathan Kuminga. And it's been made abundantly clear through reporting that a protected 2030, a lottery protected 2031st that conveys to a swap of the Kings and Warriors pick in 2031 isn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, if you really want him, the Warriors need more than that. Because this is not, the Warriors have to accept that offer and that's it. They could also just go, all right, well, that's not enough. We're going to take a risk signing him or having him play on the qualifying offer, whatever it is. We'd rather gamble in that way than gamble on this trade offer that the Kings are putting out.
Mm-hmm.
That's how the Warriors are viewing this. And that's why we talk about the Kings changing their offer. Because, yeah, that's 100% right. They're not competing with Phoenix. They're not competing with Cleveland or Atlanta or any... Pick a team. But they are competing with Golden State.
Yep.
So that's why we talk about changing the offer. So, anyways, that's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. I do want to talk about what Jonathan Kuminga, what rotations look like. Does it make sense? Because just off the dome right now, it doesn't, but I'm open to for this year, I mean, but I'm open to having my mind changed on that. And we've got a sprinkle of NFL stuff, MLB stuff,
okay,
and a bunch more Kings to dive into on the Insiders. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. This is ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Center.
Tonight's meal, tilapia surprise with boiled cabbage. Begin cooking steps 1 through 50 now.
Are you kidding me? Making dinner shouldn't feel like doing a 1,000-piece puzzle. With Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals, the hard part's already done. Pre-chopped ingredients, zero stress. Just assemble, bake, and enjoy. No complicated steps, no mountain of dishes. Try assemble and bake today. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie, and one thing I've learned is that you buy a house, but you make it a home. Because with every fix, update, and renovation, it becomes a little more your own. So you need all your jobs done well. For nearly 30 years, Angie has helped millions of homeowners hire skilled pros for the projects that matter. From plumbing to electrical, roof repair to deck upgrades. So leave it to the pros who will get your jobs done well. Hire high-quality pros at Angie.com.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Hell yeah.
Kuminga Watch.
Might be what we do all day today, because Sam Amick said that the Warriors and Kings are talking trade again. Whee!
That's right.
We are so back. We've never been more back.
You know, I was going to bring up in that last segment, one of the things I think the Kings are looking to do with the Kuminga situation. It's very specific. They look at Kuminga as a way to get Keegan Murray to the three. And they believe that like that versatility, be having two like size, you know, forwards, would really benefit them. And I agree, but I also I think there's this other sneaky thing. We keep looking at this roster, and I don't know about you, but like when you get to the backup four and five, it's just a crapshoot. Like nobody knows what Isaac Jones is at all. Nobody has any idea what's left in the tank with Dario Saric. You know, nobody knows what Maxime Raynaud is going to look like in the bright lights of the NBA. And the only guy that you probably know who he is Drew Eubanks. And I'm not even sure that that's a good thing, that you know exactly who Drew Eubanks is, because you just know that he's a guy that you can go put out there for 8 to 12 minutes, maybe, and he can hold down the position. So you're looking at both the 4 and the 5 that you have this same situation. If you're able to bring in Kuminga and have a 30-plus minute per game guy at the 4, and you're able to move Keegan Murray to the 3, and you're able to have, let's say, 20 to 25 minutes of Keegan Murray at the 3, but then you have the ability to move him as your backup 4 as well when you bring in either, you know, DeMar DeRozan or Neat Clifford. It just makes you a much more dynamic and versatile team. And to be honest, a team that, as of right now, would just be deeper and make more sense. So
I'm trying to, and sorry, I'm just trying to get a visual here. So in this starting lineup, it's Dennis Schroeder at the 1.
Yep.
Zach LaVine at the 2.
Mm-hmm.
Keegan at the 3. Jonathan Kuminga at the 4. Domantas Sabonis at the 5.
Yep.
Which makes DeMar DeRozan the 6th man.
And
which presents an issue.
Well, yeah, but I'm going to say if they go in and trade Monk, I almost like guarantee that they're going to turn around and sign Westbrook.
Okay, great. So we got Westbrook here.
Okay.
In this hypothetical. So DeMar DeRozan's your 6th man?
Yeah. DeMar and you know, him and Keon Ellis and
Russell Westbrook on the
Russell
bench.
Westbrook. And now
Where are we finding minutes for Neat Clifford?
Well, I think Neat Clifford is going to play when there's an opportunity. And I think the Kings really want to play him, but I also could see you going small using both Neat and DeMar at the 3-4. Just go a couple of 6'6", 6'7" wings.
Sure, don't hate that.
Okay, and then at the center position, you're like, okay, what do we do? That's the problem. Like the backup center situation, there's going to be a lot of staggering of lineups and stuff like that.
Sure.
But when you trade Jonas Valanciunas, who...
The nasty boy.
Who comes in at
commonly
like
known.
Number 87 in the ESPN top 100.
Sure.
Like he's still a very serviceable...
Rock solid
player. But when you lose him and all of a sudden you're playing with like not a full deck back at that position, it's tough.
Mm-hmm. This is a good point by Securing a Bagley on Neat Clifford. Like, we can all be high on him or whatever, but we keep talking about how the Kings want to win. Like, it's really clear the Kings are trying to construct a roster that wins this year. That is their goal on day one.
Mm-hmm.
And I like I said, I think that they're ready to be flexible in that goal in terms of, okay, really going for it or pulling the plug and playing some of the young guys. And Securing a Bagley makes a point in the chatty house. Neat was the 24th pick. And most 24th picks aren't going to play a lot on teams trying to win.
Nope.
That's disappointing. That's a little bit of a bummer. Like, not disappointing. I don't think it's wrong. I think it's exactly right. That's just, for me, again, and this is my personal view of this. For me, this is about, like, yeah, play Neat Clifford. See what he's got. If you get Jonathan Kuminga, play Jonathan Kuminga. See how this all fits together. But I also understand the reality when you start going, Zach LaVine has to play. DeMar DeRozan has to play. Russell Westbrook, if you're signing him, he has to play. You got to find minutes for Keon Ellis.
Yep.
Or else you're going to piss him off, and then he's going to leave in free agency. Like, that's all. Man.
It's a house of cards.
Boy, is it.
Yeah, and so I also could see, like, if you do somehow pull off this trade, and then you go sign Russell Westbrook, I could see a way in which the Kings would start shopping DeMar. You know, because again, sure. If DeMar's going to come off the bench, like he might not want to come off the bench on a team that projects as like a 35-win team.
Forgot about Isaac Jones.
Yeah, Isaac Jones.
Sorry.
But again, like we talked about this a little bit yesterday. Like the Kings, if you're trying to win, you don't have three unproven players in your rotation.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you're trying to win. Now, if you're the second half of the season, if this thing is spun out, then sure, it's okay to have three guys in your rotation that are unproven. But Isaac Jones at this point, like he's still unproven. He was a two-way player. He was an undrafted free agent rookie last year.
Yeah.
And so you're hoping that you're going to be able to get something out of him. And you know, you've been working with him all summer and you might have an idea of who you are, of who he is. But again, I don't see the Kings going out there and having a lineup with Neat Clifford and Devin Carter and Isaac Jones and mm-hmm. and Reno, and you're going to go with four first and second year players who really don't know what they're doing. That's not going to be something that's going to happen.
Yeah.
So it's tough because you want those guys to play, but the G League option might be the best for Reno. It might be the best for even Devin Carter at this point.
I would be so interested as we talk about this rotation, and I saw somebody in the chatty house. Let me find it. Megan said, how in the world would they protect the perimeter with Kuminga on the floor? And that is one of the major elements of this that I think nobody knows the exact answer to, that would dramatically change how the Jonathan Kuminga experiment goes. Because if he locks in defensively,
mm-hmm.
because we've seen him do that, you can find clips of him one-on-one with Jason Tatum and locking up Jason Tatum on the perimeter. He has that level of talent.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, can you get that level of buy-in? Can you get him to play defense, play off the ball, because you're going to get a lot of Zach LaVine on the ball, you're going to get a lot of Domantas Sabonis on the ball, you're going to get a lot of DeMar DeRozan on the ball. They're going to be asking him to do, in stretches, a lot of what Golden State was asking him to do that he was not satisfied with.
Mm-hmm.
And so, A, are you willing to go through the growing pains? Because I do think you're going to see those lapses defensively. But B, do you eventually get that buy-in, or do you get that buy-in right away that Doug Christie has been talking about? Like that, what were you saying yesterday, getting back to fundamentals defensively?
Yeah, yeah.
Being a hard-nosed, gritty defensive team. Like if you can get Jonathan Kuminga to play that style of basketball, you're going to get a really freaking good player.
Yeah, the physicality and everything else. And like, look, I think the way in which you make Jonathan Kuminga into the player that you want
mm-hmm.
is to not say, hey, we want to make you Aaron Gordon. It's to say, hey, we're going to let you be Jonathan Kuminga on one end of the court. You mm-hmm. go do you.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other end, if you don't do your job, we're going to pull you. Like straight up.
That's what happened in Golden State.
Yeah, but it's
congratulations,
like,
you've done it.
Well, no, because they never let him be, they didn't dangle the carrot for him to be the great offensive player on one end. They wanted him to be, you know, fit into their system on one end, and on the other end, you got to play defense.
Uh-huh.
Right? They're not allowing him to go be who he thinks he can be on the offensive end. And so that's where I think you can dangle the carrot and say, hey, look, if you're going to be, if you think you can score 24 a night, we're going to allow you to do that. But the second you don't play defense, we're going to be tough on you and you're going to sit on the bench. You're going to come over here. And so you're not going to go get to do the things that you want to do. You've got to have some give and take here. And where I think with Golden State was like, okay, every once in a while you can freelance and you can be yourself. But for the most part, you're going to play within this system. And the only time he was really able to freelance and do that stuff
mm-hmm.
was when someone was hurt and they weren't at full strength. Now, in this situation, he might have a more advanced role in the offensive end. And the other thing I would do is, you know, there's something about, like, Doug Christie wants to teach finer nuances of defense. And, mm-hmm. you know, that means, like, him standing in front of his own players as a head coach, but working as like a development coach and a head coach, right? We saw it last year with Zach LaVine, where after practice, he literally is working with Zach LaVine on defensive fundamentals. Mm-hmm. Like, and Zach came over and started talking to the media and like, yeah, man, like, look, I watched Doug growing up. I'm a Seattle kid. Mm-hmm. Like I watched Doug growing up and I know how good he was defensively. And if I can gain even a little bit of an advantage by talking to Doug Christie for 5 minutes after practice here and there, then I'm going to take it. Okay. Well, if you take that mentality and you allow Doug to get his hands on a player like Kuminga and maybe show him some of the finer nuances, have Bobby Jackson work with him, have Leandro Barbosa work with him, mm-hmm. like really get into the nuances. Like it is possible that you might be able to pull more out of Jonathan Kuminga as a player than what he's shown on the defensive end with the Warriors. And I think more than anything else, it's consistency that he's lacked with the mm-hmm. Warriors. He's 22 years old. Like you expect inconsistency from an 18, 19, 20, and 21-year-old player.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they've got. And so at this point, like you're hoping that he becomes something better and that he's growing and he's learning. But also I think a change to scenery is probably it's well needed.
Interesting. I would love to go to the version of Jonathan Kuminga's career where he doesn't get hurt in January of last year. Because when he got hurt, he had been playing consistently. He had been playing every night. He was playing 30-plus minutes a night. And the, 14 games before he got hurt? 33 points, 13, 20, 20, 20, 11, 11, 26, 14, 34, 34, 18, 20, 13. Like, and playing consistently and contributing and producing and doing some playmaking. And he was really starting to round into his own as a player. And then he gets hurt. He hurts his ankle. He's out a bunch of time. Golden State makes the Jimmy Butler trade. And all of a sudden, Jonathan Kuminga doesn't fit anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I would be really interested to see what this version of his career and the Warriors' kind of trajectory and specifically this restricted free agency. I'd love to see how that goes if he didn't get banged up in that for that, whatever it was, 20... God, how many games did he miss? 34 to... Was it 33 games that he missed?
Mm.
There's a good player in there. Just don't... Maybe the Kings are the team to get through to him.
I just think that right there, that statement is what the scary thing is. Because the Kings have never, ever, ever been the team to get through to somebody.
Oh, yeah. And in those 14 games, I was trying to vamp because I was waiting on this. In that 14 game stretch before he got hurt, he was shooting 40% from three, 48% from the field, 40% on 3.7 attempts a game, averaging 20.5 points, 6 boards, 2.6 assists in 30 minutes a night.
Okay.
Like there's a player there.
No, there is. Like every time he's got opportunity to like be the focal point, he's shown that he can be really good, which is why a lot of people are intrigued by him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's why, again, I know, like, with the Kings, it's B.J. Armstrong who really has, like...
Thinks he's Michael Jordan.
Yeah, well, I don't know if he thinks he's Michael Jordan, but he mm-hmm. thinks he's a really good mm-hmm. prospect that they can turn into something special.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, you're talking about a two-year commitment from him, from Kuminga. You're hoping that you don't just convert him into something special, and then he walks out the door 2 years from now and says, "Hey, thanks.
Yeah,
thanks for the good time. Taking my 24 points per game and going somewhere else."
You keep saying 24 points. How is this working?
Well, that's the question. Yeah, I don't know how many points he's going to average.
So if they're going to dangle that carrot on the offensive end and say, "You get to be you," which to me sounds like there's no system, you're the system. How does that work with DeMar DeRozan? How does that work with Zach LaVine? Well, what does Domantas Sabonis do in all this?
That's where DeMar coming off the bench, like you have no choice but to move to DeMar to move DeMar to the bench because of the shots, like the sheer volume of shots that he takes. And like, look, I think it's perfectly fitted. It's much easier to get 17 shots a night. He's not going to get 17 shots off the bench, but it's going to be much easier to get 12 shots off the bench than it would be if, like, DeMar DeRozan was still in the starting lineup and you're doing something crazy like Keegan Murray off the bench. Mm. Like, if you're going to have Kuminga and DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine and Dennis Schroeder and Domantas Sabonis, like, that's a lot of offensive firepower. And, like, there's only one ball. So that's where I think playing off the bench, which is why, again, Malik Monk was always so important to the Kings because he got so much more opportunity to run the show off the bench than, you know, like, again, Keegan Murray gets in the starting lineup.
Are Russell Westbrook and DeMar DeRozan playing together a lot in this scenario?
Oh, I think they would have to.
Ugh.
What?
Yikes.
Yeah.
What does that look like?
I don't know, but remember to...
Russell Westbrook floor spacer? We hear?
I think the other thing you got to remember is that, you know, you're going to stagger your rotations. So even if they, you know, the starting lineup that we keep putting out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they're putting the starting lineup, the core guys out there, that doesn't mean that, like, 3 or 4 minutes into the game, you're not going to sub in somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So then you can stagger DeMar with the second unit or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that there will be plenty of ways in which they can get a guy into the lineup in a different way. And the lineup won't just look like, you know, 12 minute stretches in the first quarter of two shooters and three non-shooters. It's going to look different.
Yeah. All right. There's a ton of nuance to this Jonathan Kuminga stuff. We'll continue diving into that. But I want to shift gears. I don't know. I was going to say we're going to shift gears, but we're probably not.
Okay.
To be totally honest, there's a ton of angles with this Kuminga stuff that we got to get to. 6 days until he has to sign a qualifying offer.
Yeah.
So this is all going to be resolved at some point.
Well, I'd say more
in the very near future.
4 days until training camp opens. Yeah. 4 days until media day. Yeah.
All right.
Tough.
We'll keep diving into this. We also got to talk about a Keegan Murray extension because I think that's a factor in all this as well. That's James Hammond, Kyle Madsen. We're the Insiders, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. It's ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Center.
So here's the thing with homemade meals. Eating them is great, but all the chopping and measuring and cleanup, not so much. With new one-pan assemble and bake meals from Blue Apron, you get all the flavor of homemade meals with a fraction of the work. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients, bake in the oven, and enjoy. Shop Assemble and Bake at BlueApron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. When you use Angie for your home projects, you know all your jobs will be done well. From roof repair to emergency plumbing and more, done well. So the next time you have a home project, leave it to the pros. Get started at Angie.com.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
He's James, I'm Kyle. You know what? I said we weren't going to shift gears. We are. We're talking about Jonathan Kuminga and the latest reporting that trade talks between the Warriors and Kings have fired back up. I do want to get into a couple different angles that we haven't touched on yet with that, including the Keegan Murray extension? Question mark?
Yeah.
We'll dig into that because I think that plays a little bit of a role in this. But briefly shifting gears to the NFL. Week 4 begins tonight. I forget who it was in the chatty house.
Mm-hmm.
Might have been Zabo. I'm going to credit Zabo for this. If it's wrong, it might have been Rust Dog, maybe? Somebody said, I would rather have the Monday night doubleheader with a 4 o'clock Pacific and 7 o'clock Pacific start time over having a Thursday night game.
Mm.
And I couldn't agree more. I thought that at some point, because this is a decade of Thursday night football, I thought at some point it was going to just become a routine for me. But it's not, because it's Thursday night. Like, I have things to do.
Yeah.
I can't, as badly as I want to lock into Seahawks Cardinals, I usually lock in on Monday nights, mm-hmm. all day Sunday. Like, I can't carve out another night. I thought I would get used to it. I haven't. But I'm not here to complain about Thursday Night Football. It's the Seahawks and Cardinals.
Well, I think at least it's a good game. Like a couple,
I agree.
Well, a couple of years ago, it was just like every single game was horrible. Like they were throwing like browned Giants at us.
Yes.
And it felt like actually the Giants were always a team. And you're like, this team is horrible. Why do we have to watch them? It's like an isolated game where there's no other games on.
That's Sunday nights. The Jaguars are the Thursday night team.
Yeah.
The Jags and Titans play 8 times a year and it's always on Thursday.
Yes.
That's every very time. True. Yeah. It's just always, it was two crappy teams. But they've, I think that when they went to Amazon, I think there was a ask from Amazon to not give them Browns Giants.
Yeah, to not be the bad game.
Yes.
Like, please stop giving us all the trash games.
Yes.
Yeah, because I think tonight's game, like, I don't know what to expect. And it is a big NFC West, like, mm-hmm. showdown. Like, it has implications for the 49ers, for sure.
Yeah.
Because one of these teams is going to drop 2 games behind.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Or a game and a half, like, because of the schedule, yeah, and right. stuff. But, like, still, one of these teams is going to fall behind. One of them is going to be right on your tail still. And you're like, okay, like this is, it's a pretty substantial game, especially in an NFC West that looks highly competitive all season.
Should the 49ers care who wins? I was thinking about this on the way in, and I don't think it matters. Because I think the Seahawks and Cardinals, as of right now, are very even for me.
Yeah, you played both of them already, and you beat both of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it really matters. Like, if you had lost to one of them, then you'd want that team to lose.
Of course, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
But because you've already got a 1-game advantage, you've already, at worst case scenario, split the season series with each mm-hmm. of these teams,
mm-hmm.
That kind of puts you in a situation where you're like, okay, I don't really care. Like, they might know coming out of those games which team they believe is better.
Sure.
Because, you know, they're going to have a better feel. But, you know, the 49ers beat the Cardinals missing, like, half their roster.
Right.
They had a couple of players missing in the mm-hmm. Seattle game. But mm-hmm. realistically, you went up against, you know, the Cardinals without your starting quarterback, without, you know, 2 starting wide receivers, mm-hmm. like without your tight end.
Mm-hmm.
It was a mess.
Nick Bosa got hurt.
And then you lost Bosa. And you still beat them. So I think the Niners probably have a good judge on, like, what they think each of these teams are going to be 8 weeks from now.
Yeah.
So they probably do have a preference.
This isn't one of those situations where I'm going to be rooting for one team or the other. I just can't bring myself to be like, yeah, hope the Seahawks win. That feels weird to me.
I would just like to watch a fun, competitive game.
Yeah, same. Absolutely. That's goal number one. I think if you had to pick, though, if you're the 49ers, I think you would rather see the Seahawks lose.
Okay.
Because I think the Seahawks are in a better position, or are in a position by week 8, to use your timeline, to be better than the Cardinals.
Yeah.
But I think the way it's going to play out is this is a very, very tightly contested division the entire way. And it's going to come down to tiebreakers, I think, at some point.
Okay.
So I don't think this matters because, like you said, the 49ers got wins over both of them. So both of these teams in my Tuesday tiers, trademark.
Yep.
Are trademark in tier ended. 3.
Okay.
Is there a chance that either one, I don't think either team is there a chance either team moves up or down? For you?
One team could move down if they just get lambasted. Like, if it's not a competitive game, I could see one of these teams moving down. And to be honest with you, if I was going to look at the two teams and say which one is more likely to have, like, a really, really bad game and take mm-hmm. a huge step back, it's the Cardinals.
Why?
Because of Connor. And I just think what he's meant to them. And the fact that the running backs you put in his place after that just did not look prepared at all, and they've only had 4 days to prepare.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's going to look a little clunky. And what that does is it really forces your quarterback to scramble more, which he's great at scrambling, and
mm-hmm.
but yeah. I don't think he's as effective as a thrower when he's scrambling. And so I just think it takes a little bit away.
I've always thought the opposite with Kyler. When he gets outside the pocket and starts extending plays,
yeah,
That's terrifying. The thing, I think the James Conner point is a good one, because is Trey Benson, their backup, ready to be a workhorse player? And he might be. Don't know. But I think that on the Kyler front, I think that Michael McDonald, the Seahawks head coach, is going to have a really, really good plan in place.
Okay.
I thought the 49ers did a really good job with Kyler last week. They lost contain a couple of times, but for the most part, I think did a really good job on him, particularly as the game went on. I think you're going to see the Seahawks kind of take that blueprint and execute it even better than the 49ers were able to.
Yeah.
It's because the Seahawks have a better pass rush, a better defensive line, and that could be a very, very real problem for Arizona.
I'm intrigued because early on it feels like, you know, the Lamar Jackson game that happened this week, right? The Kyler Murray game. It feels like for whatever reason, NFL teams are doing a better job of containing running quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't, again.
The Lions have 7 sacks on Monday night?
Yeah, 7 sacks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that and, you know, we watched like the McCaffrey thing. Like, I think teams are, well, actually, for that matter, I'll add another one in, the neighbors thing,
mm-hmm.
right? For whatever reason, early in the season, it feels like teams are able not only to, like, they're scheming to slow down the run, but also take away specific players, because I've never seen anything like what happened with neighbors, where he couldn't get loose at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then the same thing with McCaffrey, where they had Wilson stalking him the entire
mm-hmm.
game.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels like, whether it's the depth of the team you're playing or whatever, the teams around the league are doing a better job early in the season of scheming around certain things that typically they are not able to scheme.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... I not dove into the film,
mm-hmm.
but just based anecdotally on that, I think part of the reason that Mac Wilson can do that to Christian McCaffrey is because there's not a George Kittle to worry about.
Yep.
There's not a Juwan Jennings to worry about. You can just key on number 23 and go, all right, the secondary will take care of the receivers. And I think with the Giants, it's a little bit the same thing. It might be different with Cam Scataboo, who looks to be in line to be their starter.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to a Sacramento legend, Stingers up. I do think their receiving core, that makes it a problem, though, where you can just bracket one receiver and erase them.
Yeah.
That was what the 49ers did in Green Bay in the 2021 NFC divisional playoffs. It was just cool. Going to bracket Devontae Adams, take him out of the game, and
somebody else got
Marcus Valdes-Scantling can be the guy to beat us. Go ahead. Let it rip. And it just doesn't work out. That's what Bill Belichick was always so good at, was making a team play one-handed and it's with their offhand.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm right-handed and he makes you play with your right hand behind your back.
Yeah.
He's going to take away the best thing that you do and he's going to make your not best things win. And I don't know why more teams don't do this.
Yeah.
Or why more teams don't devote more resources to doing it, but maybe we're seeing it come back. At least in those scenarios.
Yeah, interesting stuff.
The Niners got to figure out a way to throw to somebody other than Christian McCaffrey, though. Good God. Good Lord, dude.
Yeah.
It's 436 touches is too many.
Yeah, like, the concern's still there. It's just,
yeah.
Like, what are you going to do when you get to week 10?
Yeah, like, and he's at 340 touches.
And he looks like a 75-year-old man out there running because he's been hit so many times. You're like, oh, boy.
Well, apparently, Juwan Jennings is trending the right way, although he didn't practice yesterday, so who knows what that means. Ricky Pearsall also didn't practice yesterday, but he told reporters after in the locker room that it's precautionary. They had a game that day he would play. So he's expecting to play in week 4. But man.
Well, then we had the Ayuk news today that sounds like he's nowhere near.
Yeah, John Lynch said he's not close to returning. And I don't know, not close as in this week? Okay, not close as in next week? Okay, but Kyle Shanahan said week 6. He said, but he also, Shanahan, this is before the season started, said week 6, but like it could be later. Like it could be week 10. So it's not this to me, like when he said that, the context was, the question was like, how close is he to returning? And he's like, oh, he's hitting these benchmarks. He's got this and that. But no, he's not. He's not close. I think partly to take the pressure off, but I don't. It doesn't sound like there was a setback. It doesn't sound like the rehab's not going well.
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah, there's not. He's not coming back next week. He's not coming back this week.
Well, that knee had a lot of damage outside of the ACL.
Right. It's not going to be a normal recovery. So maybe they're looking at week 7. Maybe they're looking at week 8. And if they're looking at week 8, 2 weeks later than the rough timeline Kyle Shanahan just kind of threw out there, that wouldn't be close.
Yeah.
Because that's 4 weeks. That's a month from now.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So I'm not, I don't know. The way that got aggregated sounds like, oh, a huge setback. And then you go see what he said and it's like, oh. Like he's on whatever timeline he's been on the entire time.
Yeah.
So, anyways, that's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We got more Jonathan Kuminga stuff to dive into. Plus, how does the Keegan Murray extension factor into all of this? We'll discuss that next on The Insiders, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Center.